Well, good evening. It's time for our Wednesday night class to begin. We have come in from Florida, chilly weather. This is one of those crisp, cool days that we look forward to in the middle of the summer. Then when it gets here, we start complaining about it. So it's good to see everyone here this evening. This evening, we will continue our study on the comparison of Moses and Jesus. You know, in the last some bit of time in our workbooks or in our book about the comparison of from the law of Moses to the covenant of Christ, we have been talking about how the wilderness wanderings and the exit of Moses and the people compare so closely to our spiritual walk of life after becoming a Christian and to when we reach our promised land of heaven. We've made so many connections and correlations there. Then if what we've noticed is, where the study is leading to, we have that as kind of a basis. But then on top of that, there is a layer and another layer of comparisons that all coincide together with not only our walk in life and our own exodus, but the leaders of each, of Moses and Jesus. There is an astounding amount of comparisons between Jesus and Moses. It's eerie how many connections that are made here. And that's what we're studying in our study this evening. We had just started that last week. So as we had started comparing the lives of Moses and Jesus, we had gotten on page 6 of our books, and we had finished how the people needed a Savior in Egypt of the Israelites, and Moses was sent. We had talked about last week how the people needed salvation from sin, and Jesus was sent. So we saw that comparison. And last week we had just started on how Pharaoh tried to kill Moses as a baby. And as we had discussed that, you remember how we had talked about how the Israelites were so blessed by God, living in the best portion of the land in Egypt, that they were growing in the population. And it was such a growth that the king or Pharaoh at the time got worried that that population of the Israelites was going to overpower or at least throw their allegiance with incoming warring forces, or that they might leave. And so he wanted to exercise some population control, and he required that the young boys, baby boys, were to be thrown into the Nile. And so he started this campaign of killing the young babies of the males at that time. And so we had talked about that and how the midwives had trusted in God, and they reached out and they protected the young babies, and God blessed the midwives. And we noticed that one of the babies that was saved was Moses in the basket of the Nile, and that's what we'll be discussing that a little bit later. But as we look back how Pharaoh tried to kill Moses as a young baby, we had just started how the comparison that we're making between Moses and Jesus, how Herod, the king at the time in Israel, tried to kill Jesus as a baby. So isn't it interesting how one of the kings in Egypt tried to kill Moses as a baby. Herod tries to kill Jesus as a baby. And that's what we're going to discuss right now. And this is, we're getting into where we can see so many of these similarities between Moses and Jesus really start to come together and really start to take effect here. And so let's look at this situation where Herod tries to kill Jesus as a baby. And that's found in Matthew 2, 1 through 8. Jay, if you will, read Matthew 2, 1 through 8, and then read verses 14 and 16, if you will.
Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So they said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not the least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the young child. And when you have found him, bring back word to me, that I may come and worship him also."
And then 14.
When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed from Egypt. Then Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry, and he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were born in Bethlehem and in all its districts from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men.
Thank you. So from this reading, we can determine and understand that to escape the death of Jesus, Joseph, his dad, fled to Egypt with the family. And it is interesting to note in verse 3 that after learning that there was to be a king of the Jews, Herod was very troubled. In verse 3 it says that. And when Herod the king heard it, he was troubled. And get the next part. And all Jerusalem with him. Well, that's kind of interesting that those in Jerusalem were troubled about this. Apparently this was going to shake some of the political standings of some of the people there. But they were troubled about, or at least confused about, what was going on. And so Herod had gone to the chief priests and the scribes and found out about the prophecies of Jesus, and they determined, rightly so, that he was there was a prophecy that the Messiah or the King of the Jews would be born in Bethlehem. And it's kind of interesting to note that they knew this, but when Jesus' time had come, they didn't put this together, possibly because he had moved to Nazareth, but they didn't connect this. And so if they had been keeping up, they might have noticed the connection here. But in verse 14, it says, "And he arose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt." So here they flee to Egypt, and here they seek protection. And what is so notable here in verse 16 that Jay read, Herod was livid when he saw that that they had escaped, or that the three wise men had not told him where the babies, where this new Messiah was going to be born. He was livid, angry, and he sent instructions to kill all of the baby boys about that time period in Bethlehem. I mean, this was terrible. And even this was prophesied. But here's another connection that when I was studying this, it kind of came to light. That Pharaoh tried to kill Moses as a baby, and Herod tried to kill Jesus as a baby. And there's going to be another connection that we'll make a little bit later that's even a little more to the point of this. So we see now that Jesus was very threatened as a young baby, and Moses was threatened as a young baby, and here the correlation is once again a similar pattern. Jay?
Steve, this is kind of off topic, but you kind of touch on it with fleeing to Egypt, and it kind of got me thinking. There was a lot of people that fled to Egypt for different reasons throughout the Bible, and you got Abraham.
Yeah.
Then you've got Jacob, and to flee the famine, and then now you've got Joseph and Mary and Jesus. And I'm wondering if that's just because it was a profitable and more secure area, or if there's more to it than that. I don't know if you've thought about that.
That's such a good question there. And just off of the top of my head, because of the flooding of the Nile and basically nature's irrigation, they were a very prosperous country that, even though, you know, during Joseph's time, there was going to be a drought or a famine that he saved up for, and by God's planning and providence. And so, but I think you're right that Moses was really a prosperous place at that time, and people would seek it. Paul?
Steve, there was the largest Jewish colony of the diaspora was in Egypt at that time.
Oh.
And so there was people that they could go to and live among that they would be familiar with.
Oh, during Jesus. During the time of Jesus.
During the time of Jesus.
Okay.
Yes. The Greek Empire sort of tried to turn the Jews into Greeks, and many of them fled. They found refuge in southern Egypt, which would be near the headwaters of the Nile, and formed a very large colony there.
Thank you for that information. I had no idea about that. So they would have had people that they possibly would have been related to or knew or something with that effect. Thank you. Okay, so now that we have mentioned that or made that connection, let's drop down to what we're going to talk about right now, the same situation, how Moses' ancestors moved to Egypt for protection from the famine. And it's interesting that Egypt shows up, like you said, Jay, so many times in the lives of Moses and Jesus. And what we're going to look at right now is how and why did the Israelites end up in Egypt? And to do that, Jill, if you will read Genesis 1 and 2, do that first and then skip over a few chapters to 45 and 17. I'll let you know that when. But right now, read Genesis 42, 1 and 2.
Jacob saw that there was a great there was grain in Egypt. Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another? And he said, indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die.
Okay, and skip over to chapter 45, 17 and 18.
And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart. Go to the land of Canaan. Bring your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land.
Okay. So here we notice that Jacob is in his family or in the throes of a famine, and so they say, head down to Egypt and let's buy some grain. And when they get there, who but is waiting there to help them?
God's providence in the form of Joseph.
Exactly. I'm glad you put in God's providence, because he was more or less sent on ahead, wasn't he, by God. And so Joseph was there to take them in. And look what Pharaoh, what in that last passage you read, he gave them the best of the land. He said, you will eat of the fat of the land. I mean, this is being taken care of. And we notice that this is the beginning of the people of Israel. And this is the seed or the beginning of the new nation of Israel that will be established during the Exodus. So this is how the nation of Israel went from a little tribe to becoming a sizable nation at the time. And that's all part of God's providence, as we just noted. Okay, let's make this application to Jesus. Jesus' family fled to Egypt for protection also from Herod. We just had noted that. And in Matthew, the second chapter, I just want to make a quick note of that. Doug, if you'll read Matthew 2, 13 through 15.
The angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise, and take the young child and his mother, and flee to Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night, and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son.
Thank you. And we had mentioned that verse 14 before. How Herod was trying to kill any that thought that would threaten his power. It didn't matter if it was a young prophecy of a little baby that would someday arise. He was still afraid of the power that it would maybe come back on him. And so he had instructions to kill those, and by God's providence, and maybe more talking, he told Joseph and the family to take the baby and flee to Egypt. So with God's help, they flee to Egypt. And as Moses went to Egypt for saving their families, so Jesus' family fled to Egypt for safety. Here's this other connection. And there's another unusual connection that's going on here that we touched on a while ago. Herod slew all of the male babies in and around Bethlehem. Think back what Pharaoh did. Pharaoh tried to kill all the male babies around Moses' age in Egypt. I mean, these tentacles of connections just keep getting deeper and deeper. How this is amazing what's going on, Paul.
It's interesting how many times God told Israel down through the years that you're going to fill up the sins of the nations around you. That you're going to do worse than some of the ones around you. Here you find Egypt killing Israelites, Pharaoh in Egypt killing Israelites in order to hold on to his worldly power.
Mm-hmm.
And now Israel has come full circle with Herod killing Israelites in order to hold on to his power. Now Herod was a tool of Pharaoh or of Caesar. Many of that line were educated in Rome.
Okay.
And as a result of that, they would be greatly influenced by the worldliness and the intrigue of the Roman court.
This is fascinating to see even the deeper connection that you just alluded to there. That's to me, this is what's exciting to connect these dots. This is really, really great. Doug?
You know, when Herod did that, it seems to me it might have been a political risk for Caesar. If you think what Pilate put up with, he was very unpopular with the Jews and made numerous mistakes trying to deal with the Jews. And Rome wanted peace and quiet in this nondescript area of the Roman Empire. And it seems to me when Herod did what he did, it's amazing Rome didn't say you overreacted.
Right. So here we can make that connection too. Thank you for those good thoughts there. So now we're moving on to another connection that is made between the two. We move down to how Moses is born an Israelite and becomes a prince, and the corresponding connection to that, Jesus is born an Israelite and is Prince of Peace with God our King. And as we notice how Jesus was born an Israelite but becomes a prince, that's completely... How did that happen? He was an Israelite, and the Egyptians the Pharaohs had their own lineage. This is kind of a strange thing, and we all know what happened. After the edict of Pharaoh killing the babies, there was a family that would not do that. They wove together a basket, made it waterproof, put the little baby who, as we know, was Moses in it, pushed him out into the Nile River. Daughter Miriam is standing back from a distance. It floats right down in front of Pharaoh's daughter, who was down at the edge of the river with her maidens. And the baby is crying, and she took pity on him and rescued him out of the river. And just so happened that Miriam comes up and says, "Do you need somebody to help nursing?" "Well, yeah." "Well, I'll find somebody with the Hebrew women." Guess who that was? His own mother. So she gets the mother to the Pharaoh's daughter and even pays Moses' mother to nurse him. He grows up in Pharaoh's household and becomes a son to her. And so that's in the lineage of Pharaoh, now that it's his daughter's son. Jay?
Do you know how many pharaohs apart from the Pharaoh of Moses, when Moses was born, to the time of Moses leading the Exodus? I'm curious about that, Paul. You may know that answer, but I'm trying to understand how, if he grew up in one pharaoh's household, how many pharaohs were there in between? Is there no chance that they crossed paths?
I doubt that there were many. I mean, Moses is 40 years old whenever he's forced out of Egypt. And so you figure he's in that span of 40 years, it would be a limited number. The Pharaoh who's considered contemporary with Moses historically is Ramses II. And Ramses II happened to be one of the longest-lived pharaohs in Egypt.
So
I doubt there were many pharaohs.
So is it possible that the pharaoh during the Exodus was one pharaoh removed from when Moses was a child? And was that not relations? Was it not like the kings? Was it not passed down to the pharaoh's son?
Let's put it, yes, the succession would be handed down through the family, and in those days, to put it politely, they kept succession in the family, so to speak. So it would have been kinfolk.
And Steve, what I'm trying to get at is, if you've got Moses being raised by Pharaoh's daughter, and in the household of Pharaoh, and then you got Pharaoh's son that are going to be going head to head, almost in a sense, that first Pharaoh's two sons going at it.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thought. Yeah, that's something to really consider there. One thing I want to consider before we leave this part is how, after Moses was grown up, it says he went out among his people and the Israelites. And what happened? He felt compassion upon him. You remember how those of the Pharaoh taskmasters were beating the Israelites? And he felt compassion about those that were being beaten. And it says his people. Well, if Moses was raised in Pharaoh's household, how did he start having these feelings of compassion? Do you think his mother had something to do with that, the way he was raised? I would think so. So we can see how, by God's providence, he still had this connection with those of his Israelite brethren. Okay, now that we have seen that Moses was born an Israelite and becomes basically a prince, a little distance there with the adoption phase going on. Now we're going to notice that Jesus is born an Israelite and becomes a prince of God the King. And let's look over at Isaiah and verses 9, 6 through 7. Sandy, if you will read that, Isaiah 9, 6 through 6 and 7, if you will. And Doug, if you will be looking up Galatians 4, 4 through 5. Sandy, read that when you get to it, if you will. Isaiah 9, 6 and 7. This is a prophecy of Jesus.
For a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be no end to the increase of his government or of peace. On the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it, the justice and righteousness, and then on and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this.
Thank you so much. Okay, here we notice this prophecy of Jesus. It says, first of all, that the government will rest upon his shoulders. And he would be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God. Now this is the prince that is, because he's also called the Eternal Father. And the next illustration or name is the Prince of Peace. And so all of these are terms of power, of oversight, of government resting on his shoulders, Wonderful Counselor, these is very wise. And verse 7, it says, there will be no end to his government. And look at these descriptions of Jesus. It's beautiful to see how this prophecy, and indeed it came to pass spiritually, in the spiritual kingdom that was to come. And Doug, if you'll read Galatians 4:4-5 now.
But when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth His Son, made of a woman made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons.
Okay, so we can see that what is the son of a king called? A prince. That's the term that we all use. And this is who Jesus was. He was our prince. He's the son of the king, our spiritual king. And the prince is to be honored. And he's in the royal lineage. And we could see the lineage of the throne of David is carried on throughout the generations, and we can trace his lineage back to that throne. But spiritually, he is the prince of our heavenly king, our heavenly father. So here we see Moses is in a royal family as a prince. Jesus is a son of the king, a prince. See the connection that's going on in this area. It just keeps making these. And let me just stop here for a minute. Do you think all of these things just happen by chance? When you start thinking about these correlations and all of these things happen, well, did Moses accomplish these things? And God says, well, this was pretty good about Moses. I tell you what, let's have my son, be like Moses. I don't think so. Maybe sometimes we get the timeline fixed in our mind and it has to be this way. No, when there's a planning going on, God says, I want my son, my prince, to be like this. Oh, and let's have the prototype to be like him, to help people understand what is coming. It helped, and this is what's done in Hebrews. And when they were talking about how to help the Jews understand who the Messiah was, all of these interesting connections of Moses could be understood by Jesus. And so it just helps, as we've said so often, it is the tutor. It's our shadow of the things to come. Doug?
We're reminded how intricate the plan of salvation is because it was laid first before the foundations of the world.
Yeah, that's the key right there. God had planned this since the foundation of the world. Good.
And he had eternity to weave that tapestry.
Yeah.
So we can take a look at all of these contrasts and comparisons that we're examining and be in awe of how amazing and intricate the mind of God is. And we're still not seeing all of it.
Mm-mm.
You know, if we had a lifetime to examine and measure the old covenant to the new covenant, we would still not be able to get all of the nuances of the intricacies of God's plan and God's mind in developing this.
And that's such an interesting thought there. While it's happening, they couldn't tell it was going to be these connections. It took God's revelation in the New Testament to make these connections. And once he makes these connections for us, it goes, oh, now I see. Now I see God's plan. Now I see God's foresight in this. And it's astounding.
Another reason why, and none of us really think that Jesus is a reflection of Moses. We know it's the other way around.
Right.
But to drive the point home, Matthew 17, Mount of Transfiguration, God shut everybody up. He says, you don't listen to Moses. You don't even need to think about that. You hear my son.
There you go. Exactly right. Sandy?
Something I find interesting is that it was during the time of Moses that Israel became a nation. And yet, at the death of Christ, the usefulness of that nation has been used up. It has fulfilled all of what God intended for it to do.
Mm-hmm.
To do. And so it's lost its validity. You know, it's fulfilled. Just as Christ said, he came to fulfill, and that's what he did. So it started at the time of Moses, but at the death of Christ, and when his kingdom comes, the nation of Israel is still a nation because God made it a nation, but its usefulness for God has been fulfilled.
Yeah, good point there. That there's no need for it anymore, is there? It's a new beginning. Okay, let's now that we've made those connections, what we're going to do look at now, we'll get a little bit more on this, is, and we drop down another line here on page 6 here, and what we're going to discuss right now is at first Moses was rejected, and we're going to compare that probably next week, how Jesus was rejected by the Jews. And so as we look at how Moses was rejected, remember how God had heard the cries of the Israelites in bondage? And so God sent Moses as a redeemer to save them. And when Moses tells God's plan to them, the Israelites don't believe him. It's kind of interesting to hear this man just comes out of the wilderness and says, God sent me to deliver you, and here's the plan. Well, they don't believe him. And that's pretty natural. I don't fault them for that. But let's look at Exodus 6, 8, and 9. Larry, if you will, Exodus 6, 8, and 9.
And I will bring you into the land which I swore to give Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord. So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel. But they did not heed Moses because of anguish of spirit and cruel bondage.
Okay. And go ahead and read verse 12, if you will. Verse 12.
And Moses spoke before the children. Moses spoke before the Lord, saying, "The children of Israel have not heeded me. How then shall Pharaoh heed me? For I am of uncircumcised lips."
What? Good point. That's a legitimate question. We noticed in verse 9, Moses spoke to the people, but they did not believe him. And then in verse 12, he comes to God and says, the people have not listened to me. How do you expect Pharaoh to listen to me? So this is understandable. And, you know, we would be the same way. But this is where the miracles come into play. And so God started showing the people of Israel the miracles that Moses did, and it showed that he was of God and that God had sent him because of the miracles. Now, an interesting thing about these miracles, which in fact made those Israelites believe in God, but consider, look forward to what we had just read recently. Did they always believe because of the miracles? No. The miracles was not a permanent effect on their thinking. It had a limited effect later on in Exodus. And so, we think, oh, if I could only see a miracle, oh, that would get me over the edge. I could believe for sure now. Well, do you know, there was a case that was explained in the New Testament. Remember what happened with the rich man and Lazarus? How in Hades that the rich man asked Abraham to send Lazarus back. What was the request? If he comes back from the dead, he can tell my brothers not to come to this place. This would have been a miracle. And what does Abraham say? He says, if that happened, they wouldn't believe it. Let them hear Moses and the prophets. Miracles have a great effect to start with, but if they happen, they don't have a permanent effect. They are sometimes temporary, especially if you become to expect them. And so, here we notice that this is one of the times that we have miracles that happened, but they aren't the end-all solution, because we have read that when the perfect comes, those things which are of the early parts or the childish things or those will be done away with when the perfect comes. When the perfect law of liberty, this word of God, when Jesus, who is perfect, comes, there won't be a need for miracles anymore. And so, with that being noted, we will take up that Moses was rejected this time in his stage, but next week we will see how Jesus is rejected. And both of these happen at the beginning of their ministries. So let's take note of that and read ahead a little bit if you'd like on that. Thank you for your good comments and the participation in class. It always helps so much.